I have a few students that I coach, and I tell them, look, control what you can control. The only thing that I control is what I do in the room. So I get there, I'm as prepared as I can be. With for me, it's like I don't like being overprepared. I like to be able to make a decision on my feet sometimes to keep it interesting for me. But I'm as prepared as I can be in the moment, and I'm listening, and you know, so I try to control that. Everything else I have no control over. I have no control over who they're bringing in for the role. I have no control over who they ultimately choose.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Welcome to another episode of Creative Chats. It's the podcast for artists, makers, and content creators, where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. Now, welcome to this very special episode of Creative Chats. Why is it so special? Well, because this is the 1 year anniversary of Creative Chats podcast. Yay! That's right. I'm excited, and this is just like the beginning. I mean, I've had so many amazing guests on this past year, some that I was just like, I don't even know how these things came about, these conversations, but I was so thankful for each and every guest who shared their insights, shared their journey, just shared conversations with me that would be helpful for you as well on your own journey. And that's why I'm doing this, because I want it to be something that's helpful to you, a resource for you on your own creative journey, no matter what the expression is. And I've had guests that were visual artists, musicians, I've had entrepreneurs and business leaders, I've had writers and actors. I mean, it just really runs the range of creative expressions. And some of those people are really well established and have had a lot of success in the area of their creativity. And others are maybe just starting out, or maybe are not really that far along in their journey, but they're sharing what they've experienced so far and those things that are universal to us, no matter what our expression of creativity is. We can all learn from each other. And so I just wanna say thank you for being on this journey with me. And I also have a big announcement that because you're listening to this right now, if you listen to this actually when it drops before October 2nd, 2020, then you're gonna get a little sneak peek on something. I am announcing and I am throwing open the doors on October 2nd, 2020, which is my birthday, to celebrate 1 year of this podcast. And I always like to have a project that is something I'm working towards or launching for in and around my birthday as a way of not just celebrating me, but also inviting you into something that's helpful for you. So, what is it? It is something that is community driven. It is a Facebook group that is for you. Yes, you. It is a group that is for people who want to excel in their creativity, a place to ask questions, a place to grow alongside of each other and to learn. And I will be active in that group, doing some Facebook Lives in the group and answering some questions, asking some questions. And I'm hoping that it will be a community that will help you go to the next level in whatever your creativity is. A place that you can ask some questions about maybe your craft, about the process, about maybe how to monetize some of your creativity. And it is called Daily Creative Habit. And so I've set up a URL that if you go to dailycreativehabit.com, it will forward you right to the Facebook group. Now, you do need to be signed into Facebook in order for that page to come up. But as soon as it does, you can request to be a part of this group. Why did I call it Daily Creative Habit? Well, because really that's been the thing that's been most instrumental in my own journey. I talk about this a lot. I talk about how developing a daily creative habit is the thing that really made me discover my voice, my style, It helped me uncover certain principles and methods that were really key for me to grow in my creativity, and then also to launch into my own business, you know, monetizing creativity. And so I want to share those things with more people. It's not enough that I just experienced those and that I got some wisdom along the way and that it's beneficial for me. I want it to be beneficial for you. I want it to help other people. And so this is just a place where we can gather, where we can learn and grow, ask questions. Again, it's a community. So I want people to be in there who are going to be active and who are going to ask questions, answer questions, and be a part of what's happening there. So this is your invitation. It is a few days early if you're listening to this when this episode drops. And just head over there and join this Facebook group. Be a part of the community that will be happening. And if you have a special project that you've been working towards, maybe you've been thinking about, maybe you started something and it stopped a while ago and you want to pick it back up, this is a great community to be a part of, to get some accountability and to just talk about it so that it's not just in your head. A lot of times we need the people around us to cheerlead us on. We need people around us to lend their perspective on things. And so maybe you're trying to build up a body of work. Maybe you want to launch a certain project and you need some people to come around you to encourage you and to, again, lend some insights, ask some questions. This will be a place where you can do all that and so much more. So head over to dailycreativehabit.com and it will forward you right to the Facebook group. And you can answer a few questions and request to be a part of that group. And I look forward to seeing you there. It's going to be an amazing next step for so many of us. Now for today's episode, I am so excited to introduce to you my guest, Mark Christopher Lawrence. Now, Mark is an actor and comedian who has quite an impressive body of work. I mean, look him up on IMDb and you will see just, I mean, credit after credit. He's been involved in so many different projects. It's incredible. He's worked alongside Jerry Seinfeld, Rodney Dangerfield, Jeff Foxworthy. You probably would know him best from being a series regular in his role as Big Mike on NBC's Chuck. And I loved that show. That was an incredible show. I would tune in every week. I loved seeing him and the rest of the cast. It was something that was, I felt like that show just got me, you know, as being kind of a nerd. Anyway, he has also been in The Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith. And check this out, Terminator 2. That's right, folks, alongside Arnold Schwarzenegger. And if, again, you want to see his body of work, his resume, just go on IMDb and you will see credit after credit of so many amazing projects he's had the opportunities to be involved with. And he's got a new special called Dry Bar Comedy Special. And it is just some stand-up comedy that is really hilarious. Mark is a great guy. I so appreciated the time that he took out to sit down with me to talk about just his journey as an actor and comedian and talk about his process and just really unfolding some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that you wouldn't normally get to hear about. And so I know that you're really going to enjoy this conversation, that you're going to take a lot away from it. And I want to encourage you, make sure that you go and follow Mark, check out his videos. I mean, there's so many hysterical moments in his stand-up comedy and in a lot of the videos he puts on YouTube as well. So I'm excited to call him a new friend. And I hope that after this interview that you will consider doing the same. And so without further ado, here is my creative chat with Mark Christopher Lawrence. Well, Mark Christopher Lawrence, thank you so much for spending time with us today here on Creative Chats Podcast.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. So I'm a fan of Chuck. I obviously know you from the role of Big Mike and appreciate your work there, as well as in many other roles that you've appeared in so many films over the years and TV shows. And I'm excited to dive into some of that today and just explore your story and just how some of those opportunities have come about and just also how creativity continues to show up in your life and how you harness the power of that. So let's just dial back to childhood, if we can. And is there an experience maybe that you had around creativity that told you that you were a creative person when you were a kid?
I don't know if there was a specific experience. You know, when I think back on my childhood, you know, my brother was an awesome athlete, so I thought I was going to be an athlete, but I didn't have his skill. And I used to always make faces in the mirror. just for no good reason. I'd be standing there just making faces for 10, 15, 20 minutes at a time. And, you know, and then one day I thought, this is kind of weird, but I kept doing it. And then in the 10th grade, I had a teacher that got me involved in speech and debate and oral interpretation of literature and put me in my first play and introduced me to a guy who put me on stage as a comic for the first time. And I think that's where the creativity started when I met this teacher. You know, she saw something that I didn't know was there really and kind of started helped me shape it. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Encouragement of other people is so valuable. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got put on stage for, you know, stand-up comedy. And what did that look like for you the first time? I mean, was this something that you were thinking about in terms of like people who you appreciated their comedy and were trying to emulate some stuff? Or is this just kind of like a improvisational, hey, we're going to go up and see what happens?
No, Perry was kind of like a mentor. He coached me through one of my speeches. It was a piece of literature that he had done when he was in high school. And then he was producing some shows called An Evening of Soul at USC and told me that he wanted me to do one of the shows. And so me and another friend decided that we were going to start trying to do some comedy. He dared me to go up on stage at the Comedy Store. And I went up and did 3 minutes of just talking about my day and was funny. And I come off stage and Louis Anderson said to me, hey, you got something there, kid, keep writing. And then, you know, over the years, it just got, you know, at that point I was bitten by the bug and it just snowballs, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, Perry, after that first night on stage, about almost a year later, Perry put me in one of the Evening of Soul shows. And I think that was the real beginning of it. Mm. You know, because I was getting a lot of laughs. I think he gave me like 7 minutes, and it was this energy that I still get today. You know, nervous right before, and then you go on, and you start getting laughs, and you're fine. Mm. And yeah, that was the beginning of the comedy.
Nice. And
I was in the 11th grade. By the way.
Wow. Man, that's incredible. So I would assume that then as you continue just to show up and step into these opportunities, more opportunities present themselves, right? I mean, is that how it kind of presents itself or?
Sometimes, you know, like college came and so I stopped doing it for a while. And then once I got settled in at college, then I started hitting open mics again. And that's when it really became a thing. You know, once I started hitting these open mics, me and a good friend of mine, we started going out and we'd go, okay, we'll hit this open mic. It was always a competition. And we'd go up against like singers and we say, no matter who wins, we'll split the money. Mm-hmm. And so we were usually first and second or first and third. You know, every once in a while we get robbed and end up being like second and third or something like that. I don't think we ever went home with no money at all. Yeah, so, but that was the cutting the teeth part of it. And then I think what happened was I was opening at some clubs and ended up opening for some older comedians. Robin Harris I opened for, who was just crazy funny. You know, and his act was kind of blue until the weekends. It's like he had me open for him at like these family shows in a park at 2 o'clock. And he's basically doing the same act, squeaky clean. And he says, Mark, write clean. You can work anywhere. Mm. And, you know, that just made sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think in a sense that, you know, the more you do, the more you end up doing, mm-hmm. you know, because people start seeing you and you start building a little reputation. But because of college, I think I was in debate and I was on the debate team. I was went to USC on a debate scholarship. And yeah, so I had to travel with that. And then I was in theater at USC. So that was a big time suck. So it was like, it was hard to do comedy in college. And then after college was over, I went to San Francisco and did a show with the San Francisco Mime Troupe. And when that show was over, I ended up coming home and there was nothing going on. And I had already started working professionally as an actor in TV. And I think I had done my first play by then. I mean, my first movie by then, and had done several plays with the Los Angeles Theater Center. But I came home, nothing was going on. I was like, man, it's slow. I'm gonna take a couple of weeks, go back to San Francisco and hang out. And I go back up there and they were having some signups for the San Francisco Comedy Competition. And I got in and ended up making it to semifinals with really not having a structured act. Hmm. And then I came home and seriously started working on an act. I was like, you know, I can do this. And so I go home and did a show called Dare You to Laugh. It was a cable access TV show that this lady, Nikki, was producing. And you'd do 5 minutes in each segment of the show. She would tape, I think, 2 or 3 shows each time she taped. And so she became the first person to pay me to go on the road and do a show. So she took me up to Tacoma and I did a show with her. And on the way up, she goes, oh, by the way, Speedy's not going to make it. I'm going to need you to do 30 minutes. I didn't even know if I had 30 minutes. So I took a business card and wrote all these little sort of one word things to remind me of a joke on the back of it, and I did my set. I did 37 minutes. I was like, oh, I'm a feature.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So that must have been really like incredible, just having those experiences, building on those things. And then was there a lot of like overlap as far as, you know, your acting roles and then, you know, your stand-up comedy? Like, were you weaving in and out of those things, or was it more just?
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, early in my career, I was really busy commercially. You know, I did a lot of commercials and a lot of sitcoms. And so those things would come and go, but I was still doing comedy. And then I think I had a girlfriend for a while that you know, because of her, I stopped doing comedy for about 3 years. And, you know, ultimately, that didn't work out. And then when I started doing comedy again, my act didn't fit. And I was like, my act is kind of tight. And I completely rewrote my act and went squeaky church clean in 6 months. And, you know, it took me 6 months to get a new act. And, you know, and that's the way I work today.
Love that. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I appreciate the fact that you do the clean comedy and that, you know, especially as a parent, you know, someone who and appreciates comedy, to be able to introduce my kids to things where I don't have to worry about like, ooh, you know.
Yeah.
We got to hit the fast forward button for a minute there or a mute button.
Yeah. I have a friend who he's a pastor and he's a comic and he does a bit in his act. He says that, you know, sometimes I get people would ask him if you know, when he does comedy in clubs and there's all that language going on in clubs, you know, does that rub off on you? Then are you afraid that if you do comedy at a church, you're going to slip and cuss? He goes, no, because when I cuss you out, that's going to be on purpose.
Oh, that's funny. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Man. So in terms of like how you come up with your material, right? Walk us through a little bit of like, what's your process? I mean, do you just get little bits and pieces, and then you mentioned before about, you know, scribbling some things down on the back of a card, yeah. You know, what inspires you and what does that process look like?
I don't know what inspires me. I get that question a lot, and I have no idea. I never really had a solid structured process. Like, I'd wake up in the middle of the night with a joke in my head, and if I didn't write it down right then the way it came, the way I saw it in my sleep, it wasn't funny. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'd be ironing. I remember ironing one day, and a joke popped into my head, and I had to stop and write the joke. And then, so for years I was doing it that way. And then I was like, okay, there's gotta be a better way. And I was having a period of where I just couldn't write. I was just blocked. So a friend of mine who I played football with was teaching a poetry workshop. And so he and I were talking. He says, well, just come to the workshop. And he says, you know, maybe I can give you some tools that'll help you. And so he gave me this one tool that really, to this day, I still use. He tells you to write in the left margin of a piece of paper the date you were born, and then draw a line straight across to the other margin in today's date. And then everything that you can think of that affects you positively, you draw a little hash mark up and write what it was. And if you can remember the date, that'd be great because it helps you with details. And all those things, all those positive things, you write above the line. And then all the negative things that affected you, you write them below the line. So then all of a sudden you have all these stories. And so then I just pick a story now. So what I do is, like, I go through and I'll pick a story and I'll talk it and see what it is. And okay, yeah, this could be funny. And then I get on stage and start putting it out there and see what happens. Mm. And because I know the stories, it's easy to tell the stories and get it figured out. But the hard part of it is once the story gets to a point where me just talking it is as funny as I think it can get, then I sit down and I write the bit out completely and use other tools to punch it up. Mm.
Yeah. So I've heard a lot of people talk about writing on stage. And this whole concept of, you know, you're bringing your material, you obviously want to see if it makes an impact, and then making the tweaks and, you know, there being a little bit of like fluidity to that process. Have you experienced a lot of that as well?
I don't know that I've experienced a lot of it. I think what happens with me is once I get to a point where I don't have to think about the joke, and I'm doing my set, stuff will pop out in my set while I'm on stage. And then the challenge is, can I remember it when I get off stage? that thing that was funny. And usually I just run right off stage and just talk it into my phone so I'll have it. But sometimes, you know, people are waiting, want to shake your hand and all that. And not that I'm shaking hands right now. Yeah. but yeah, for me, I think, you know, once I'm not thinking about the jokes and I can get on stage and just do my thing, then new stuff comes out all the time, like in the middle of a joke and stretches the joke. So,
Yeah. So it sounds like there's like systems and processes that maybe even are running under the current at this point that you utilize, not to overanalyze comedy, right? But, you know, I think some of those things are helpful. Because when you start to identify those things, you know, it helps you get into that place of flow quicker and get to the good stuff. I know for me as a visual artist, you know, there are things that sometimes ideas come to me and I'm recognizing like patterns. I'm looking for connections and I'm going, ooh, if I connect that with that, this may yield a different result that may be really interesting. And a lot of experimenting and playing, you know, those kind of things. Do you find that you're more wired for like improv or more kind of a methodical approach?
I think because I'm a theater actor first, you know, I think I like to say the words the way they're written and make them work. But, you know, that being said, like I said before, a lot of times new stuff pops out while you're on stage. And I think I take an improv class. It's basically a class to help you write on your feet. And characters that I've created in that class have popped out on stage. Mm. You know, which is always interesting because I'll be in the middle of a bit and somebody will say something and then I'll talk to them as the character. And so that's been interesting. Mm. An interesting part of it.
So yeah. how does, you know, comedy as far as stand-up and your, you know, acting roles, like walk us through, do you approach that differently? I mean, is there one that maybe feeds you a little bit more than the other as far as that, you know, creative itch?
I think for me, stage acting feeds, I think, the beast more than anything. Because with TV, it's very formulaic, the writing. You know, every page they want three jokes, and you know, you can see the formula in it. And with theater, there's just more time to develop the characters. The author has taken a lot of time to show you who this person is. And, you know, as an actor, it's like you really want to be able to take the information that the author has given you and make that work and affect people. And you know, thank goodness I do it well.
Yeah. And you have quite the resume that proves that. So, yeah. I'd love to ask a little bit about maybe some of the specific roles and, you know, just how maybe they came about or something that may be, you know, memorable or interesting about that. You know, for one, you were in The Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith, right? And, you know, how did that come about? And just, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So my agents call me up and say, hey, we're sending you some material for an audition for today. And I live in San Diego, but the audition was in LA. And I said, okay. They said, you know, you have about 4 hours to get there. Don't worry. Don't stress yourself, but just, you know, look it over and get there. And so I did that and I drive up and sit there for like maybe 40 minutes in the parking lot, just continue to go over the material. And then I go in and I do it. And Will Smith's people were there. He wasn't there. And I felt great about the audition. And I started driving back home and my agents say, hey, so they love you and they want to bring you back for the director. He's out of town, but he'll be back. You know, he's from Italy. He'll be back in 2 months. I said, all right. So I just let it go. And so that's what I try to do. I try to just go in, do it, and let it go. So he gets back to town. I get a call. Hey, so the audition is going to be, you know, on Thursday or something. It's like 3 days from the day that they called me. So I started working on the stuff again. And I get ready, and I get up there, go in, I read. And in the middle of the read, he's looking at me like this. And then I get through the scene and he goes, no, he says, this is not a funny movie. This is not funny. I said, black people are going to laugh at that. So he has me do it again without being funny. So I do it again, which felt very flat. And then I do it another time and, you know, thank you. I leave, I call my agent, I say, that one's dead. I said, this director hates me. And so finally, I guess about a month or two later, I get a call and I get the job. And so I go up and, you know, we're working and he has a party, a Halloween party. You know, they had rented a house for him in San Francisco. So I go to the party. And I'm a little early, and so he says, oh, I'm glad you're here early. He says, I want to talk to you. He says, I didn't want to hire you. He says, and now I'm so glad I did. He says, because I know the part needs a rewrite, and I didn't have time to do it. He says, but you're bringing stuff to it that's not there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted to go, I knew you didn't want to hire me.
Busted.
But I guess out of all the people that he saw, I was better than everybody else, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So you touched on this briefly as you were telling the story, and I would just love for you to maybe share a little bit, like, how do you deal with the amount of up and down and the, you know, the rejection and the, you know, constantly putting yourself out there and not letting that either decimate you and, you know, just completely throw you. So you're like, that's it, I'm done. Or, you know, believe the hype of yourself too much. You know what I mean? Like I'm thinking there's gotta be something that helps navigate those waters.
Well, I mean, it's a business of high highs and low lows. I mean, you're either working or you're not. And you know, as you said, you're always putting yourself out there. Early in my career, there were several times where I thought, yeah, maybe I should go do something else. And, you know, because I'd go like a couple of months without a job and just start freaking out. But as I got older, it's like I realized that, you know, as I'm able to just go and do the audition and let it go, I'm fine. Because here's the thing. It's like they're not rejecting me. They just chose somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, there's been several times where I've worked, gone in an audition, didn't get the job, and then worked with the producers again on something else. And they said, you know, we want to hire you for this other thing, but there was some reason that I didn't get it. Like this one commercial producer said to me that he had to fight for me for this one job because the girl that they liked was taller than me. And the director kept telling him, look, he's the money. He says, you can put him on an Apple box if you want that girl. He says, but he's the one selling your product. Go with him. And so, but you never know why you don't get a job. And so I can't take that on.
Right.
Once I was able to let that go, like the same producer said to me, he says, yeah, he says, you don't know why you don't get a job. He says, you come in, you got on a purple shirt. One of the producer's wife left them last night. She had on a purple dress. You're guilty by association.
Yeah.
So I try to just go in, do it, and let it go. You know, like right now is a classic example of too much downtime. So, because your mind starts thinking, well, I see that there's some people doing something somewhere. You know, why am I not doing something somewhere? And I realize that it's not me. You know, I have nothing to do with the pandemic,
right.
And so the opportunities come when they come, and you get the things that are meant for you.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like God opens the doors and he wants you to walk through.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen a lot of people choose specifically to say, I'm not going to focus on what I can't do right now, but what I can. And this is something that I've tried to adopt to myself as well, right? There are a lot of things that we can't do. And if we focus too much on that stuff, then it's just a downward spiral. But if we can say, okay, this is presenting some unique challenges, and maybe there's opportunity here that we wouldn't normally pay attention to. Maybe there's something that we need to invent or reinvent or revisit. And this is giving us the ability to do that, you know. Have you found that that's, you know, some of the things that are happening with you as well, where it's forcing you to like think, how do I adapt?
I don't know that I actively sit down and go, you know, how do I adapt? I just do. You know, I know that I've changed over the years. I'm not as young and beautiful as I used to be. I think to my credit, I've gotten better as I've gotten older. As an actor, I've gotten much better. As a comic, I think I know how to write better for myself. I know that, you know, what works for me. So I think I just adapt as I go. It's like, you know, it's a constantly changing thing, you know?
Yeah.
because, I mean, one, every role is different. You know, like, I feel like people should be able to look at my resume and look at my demo reel and go, oh, yeah, let's just bring him in. You know, and that happens sometimes, but not as much as I would like. But I think that you know, just looking at my body of work and looking at my reel, you should be able to look at your project and go, oh, yeah, he'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but sometimes people just want to drag you in the room. And I get it.
Yeah. Like you were saying before, there's a lot of variables and a lot of people in the mix. And so that's the stuff you don't have control over, right?
Yeah. Yeah. When I coach, I have a few students that I coach and I tell them, look, control what you can control. The only thing that I control is what I do in the room. Mm-hmm. So I get there, I'm as prepared as I can be. For me, it's like, I don't like being over-prepared. I like to be able to make a decision on my feet sometimes to keep it interesting for me. But I'm as prepared as I can be in the moment, and I'm listening, and, you know, so I try to control that. Mm. Everything else I have no control over. I have no control over who they're bringing in for the role. I don't have no control over who they ultimately choose.
Mm. Yeah.
You know? And so if you just let that stuff go and just worry about, you know, your audition, don't worry about it, but prepare for it, you're going to be fine. Mm.
Yeah, that's good advice for sure.
Yeah. You're either going to get a job or you're not. And if you don't get it, okay, something better's right. coming.
Yeah.
They're lost.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I love having these conversations with a variety of people through a variety of creative expressions, because it's the thing that's like the thread that traces through it all, because we all have these situations where we're all trying to create something. We're all trying to be a part of something creatively. And there are challenges. There are, you know, things that we want to accomplish that maybe, you know, we haven't been able to do yet, or, you know, yeah. successes we're trying to build on, opportunities that we're trying to lean into. And yet we're like, I don't know what's going to happen. And so showing up just to be your best self, to bring your craft and to bring what you uniquely bring to the table, and know at the end of the day, like, I did all I could do. And, you know, if it's meant to be and it's going to happen, then it's going to happen. If not, then I'm going to just keep moving and keep showing up.
Yeah, exactly. I think sometimes as artists, we get so bogged down with what people think that we don't really concentrate on doing our best work and being happy about what we're doing, even if the job is at stake. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to be happy about what you did. When I try to leave the room without questioning what I did in the room. And once I do that, then I'm happy. You know, but if I leave the room going, oh, I should have did this, I should have did that, I should have did, then I wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So let's transition a little bit here and let's talk about Chuck. Okay. Love Chuck. Love just, I was watching that when it was on the air just every week, waiting and going, oh man, this show gets me. You know,
I just started rewatching it last week.
Oh yeah. Is it interesting for you to now revisit?
There's some funny stuff in there. Because I didn't get to see them all while we were on the air, because sometimes I'd be working.
Okay. Yeah.
And Jeff and Lester cracked me up. Morgan, I think, is my favorite character on the show. I think he is brilliant. Mm. Mm.
What was it like working with such an incredible cast?
It was fun. I mean, you know, it's like it was a huge cast. There's a lot of people in that cast, and it was fun going to work. And everybody was cool to be around. You know, it was really a good time.
Mm. I think that shows through in the work. You know, there's a chemistry that's there, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did a table read of one of the episodes during this pandemic on Zoom, and the chemistry is still there. Mm.
Yeah. Do you guys, really cool. Do you keep in contact with anybody there, or is it?
There's a few folks that you know, I touch bases with, you know, occasionally. Clearly, Scott Krinsky, because he's a comic, and Vic Sahai, we chatted once in a while. Julia Ling, Zach.
You know. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. It feels like family, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like people that you worked with for a while that you really admire and enjoy their company, and it's you know, you try to stay in touch.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite moments from Chuck?
Yeah. I have one favorite moment. There was an episode where we're shooting one of the Christmas episodes. I had the Santa suit, and I get to work, and my dressing room was on stage 10 when I wasn't in the trailer. And so I go to stage 10 to my dressing room. And as I walk through the door, the craft services setup is right there inside the door. It's like, this is odd. You know, 'cause they usually have like a room, a whole craft services room on that stage. So I get into my Santa suit. I got everything on except for the jacket, because they always just held that for me on set, so I wouldn't have to walk around in. So I got on, you know, the set of pants and boots and white t-shirt, the suspenders. And now I'm going over to makeup to get my beard and stuff on. And I get back toward the door, and there's people standing around the craft service. So I start talking to a guy that I thought I knew, but I wasn't quite sure. And we just had a conversation. Turns out we had worked on something else together. And so I get a plate, I get some bacon, and I'm sitting there eating some bacon. And it's like that crack bacon, you know, the maple syrup, oh, yeah, whatever it is. And so we're sitting there talking, and then the PA comes over. He says, "Hey, Mark, they're ready for you for a run through on stage 17, and then we'll get you over to makeup, get your makeup and beard done." I was like, "All right, cool." So we're walking over, and I'm eating this bacon, and I say to him, I said, "Hey, why is craft services right inside the door right there?" He goes, "Because it's not our craft services. We rented that stage out today, and we're just cracking up." It was so funny. And ever since then, it's like any messages between he and I have something to do with
bacon. Yeah.
Like, we're always talking to each other on social media. It's like we might not talk for 6 months, but then I'll get a message from him going, "Hey, steal any bacon lately?"
That's awesome.
It was so funny.
Yeah, yeah. So it's such a treasure to have, you know, connections like that, memories like that, and that continue to live on. You can continue to laugh about. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
So good.
Yeah, I think that was my faux pas for the year, but it was hilarious. And I got bacon out of it.
There you go. So. No lose.
Right.
Oh, man. So what types of stuff do you still like long to do that you haven't done yet? Right. I'm sure there's something that you're thinking like this would be the perfect project or the perfect type of role or.
Yeah, I want to play, you know, a darker character, you know, something really dark. And at one point I was trying to find, you know, maybe a biopic kind of character to play, and the one that me and a writer friend had come up with that we thought would have been a great story, it was I think they called him the Grim Creeper. It was this guy in LA who was a garbage man, who was like the nicest guy in the neighborhood. Like, this girl needed a car and he built her a car from scratch. You know, he went and got her a chassis and an engine, and then, you know, put a car together for her and just gave it to her. You know, he was like that kind of guy. But his wife had left him. They were still married, and she was living in a house somewhere across town. And turns out he was murdering prostitutes. And, you know, when they finally caught him, you know, they were able to pin 20 murders on him, but they think it might be as many as 100. Because what had happened was he was taking them to the landfill and dumping them, you know, with his truck. And somebody beat us to the punch. It's like we started writing it, and then all of a sudden we saw it in the trades that somebody else was doing it. It's like,
yeah.
So I want to play something darker because people see me as funny, and clearly, I mean, I can do everything. I can do it all. Like when I choose plays, for example, I usually choose very heavy plays. You know, like the last plays I did Top Dog Underdog and A Raisin in the Sun. That was 2012. And, you know, both of those characters are very tragic. You know, it's like some tragic stuff happened. Mm. And so I'm usually looking for a heavier thing. So that's, I think for me, that's what I would want to do, something heavier. Hmm.
Yeah, to show range and have some challenge, I'm sure, too, right?
Yeah, my first big agent, you know, when they signed me, I was doing Life is a Dream, a Calderon piece, a classic piece, you know, very heavy character. I played King Basilio, who basically takes his son and puts him in a cave and has somebody teach him, because he the soothsayer said that he was going to take over the throne at an early age. And I was like, no, he's not. He's going to live in this cave. And so it's just this very heavy role, right? And so they signed me. But as soon as they saw me do stand-up, all they sent me out for after that was sitcoms. So my early career is basically all sitcoms until, you know, a couple movies dropped in there, Terminator 2, yeah. Crimson Tide. But, you know, the whole time I was with them, it was 99% sitcoms.
Mm. Yeah. Speaking of Terminator 2, I was watching that recently, and I was like, oh, there you are. And you get thrown through the window there.
Yeah, change the way we watch film with the morphing, you know. Yeah. I think at the time, Michael Jackson had been the only person to use it in something. And it was the black and white video, and it was $10,000 a second at that time. Mm. So that's what they were spending on that movie. That's why Terminator 2 was so expensive, because they were using that morphing.
Wow.
And you know, it changed the way we watch movies.
Yeah,
because now you can do it with your iPhone.
Yeah,
you know, my very first job was Hill Street Blues, which changed the way we watch TV. Mm-hmm. All the cop shows now are sort of based on that. You know, the way that was. It was so gritty at the time. It was just amazing.
Yeah,
it was my first audition and got the job. And we're just so happy to be on the set of Hill Street Blues. It's my favorite show.
Yeah. What's your maybe favorite role that you've done so far?
Well, clearly in TV, I think it's a toss up between Big Mike on Chuck or Fletcher on the George Wendt Show. And then film, I did a little movie called Fear of a Black Hat with Rusty Cundiff and Larry B. Scott. We were a rap group called NWH. And I think it's the only thing that I've ever done, you know, in film or TV that I just look at and laugh. And I think I was, at the time, I wasn't that great of an actor at the time. I was finding myself, but it's funny. It's a rap spinal
tap. Oh, nice. Is what it is.
Yeah, and there's a lot of language in it. It's like every day I'd go, shouldn't we do a clean take? And but it's hilarious. It's and then in stage, I think, you know, I've been doing these August Wilson plays, and I played Boy Willie. And I just said to a friend of mine the other day, I want to play Boy Willie again, because I was so overwhelmed with the amount of words that he spoke. Mm. That I didn't have fun. I didn't start having fun until about 2 weeks into the run. And I think if I had another shot at it, I could be much better at it just because I would approach it differently. Because there's one point in the play, you know, I think the play is like 109 pages or 108 pages, and he speaks most of the words on 86 pages. There's one section where it's basically a 10-page monologue that's interrupted, you know, every like page and a half or so with one line from somebody. And one of the interruptions is, why don't you just shut up? and so I think if I had it to do over again, I would learn that speech first. And then everything else is gravy after that, because the rest of it is all scene. Mm. You know, but that speech was just a bear. Mm. You know. Just getting it in your head, you know, 10 pages is kind of tough.
Yeah, I would think that would be very intimidating.
Yeah, I think the hard part of it was that he's always talking about the same thing. He says, I'm going to, you know, I got this truck of watermelons outside. I'm going to sell those. I got a third of the money in my pocket. And I'm going to sell this piano. And that'll be the other third. I'm going to go buy some land. And so he keeps saying that in different ways, you know, throughout the speech. And it's like, so it was so, and I like to be word perfect, you know, especially when I'm doing theater, you know, and it was so, so tough getting that speech in my head. But once I didn't have to think about that anymore, then I started having fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. So let's talk a little bit about Dry Bar Comedy Special.
Dry Bar Comedy?
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Dry Bar basically does these squeaky clean shows that's shot in Provo, Utah. You know, before you get there, they actually send you an email telling you that Provo clean is not, you know, America clean. it's cleaner than that. And so which for me was easy, because I was just like, okay, I'll just do a church set, do my church set, and I'll be fine. And it's called Mark Christopher Lawrence Clean Out of Compton. And it's very fun. It's like I hadn't heard of it, and a friend of mine, Frances DiLorenzo, who's a very funny comedian, she called me up one day and we were talking, and she says, hey, do you have a Dry Bar special? I said, no, what is that? She sends me a link, and I said, oh, that's cool. She says, I think I can, you know, get you to the bookers and get you on there. She said, you should be on there. I was like, okay. And so just so happens they were booking the last two spots for the season, and they put me in one of them. You know, one of my clips from it has 18.9 million views the last time I checked the views of it, and, you know, on Facebook alone. And so it's like 18.9 million views. I'm just telling a story about a guy that died during my set.
Wow.
Yeah. He was resuscitated, but, you know, still there's a whole lot of ego comes with killing a guy.
Sure. It gives a whole new meaning to, like, yeah, I really killed him tonight.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It makes you think, you know, had two people killed over, or three people? Does that make me a serial killer?
Oh, wow. So we're coming to the top of our time here, but I'd like to ask you one last question if I can. And
sure.
That would be, like, what is something that someone told you along the way that was really instrumental for your creativity, your business, your craft, that you would love to pass along to somebody else?
Well, one thing we already talked about, which was control what you can control. You know, control what you do in the room. And the other thing was Bill Cosby gave me a piece of advice. I was working on Ghost Dad, and I'm sitting in my trailer with the door open, and I'm watching a 7-minute tape of me doing comedy. And I think it was my first tape, you know, and he and Sidney Poitier were passing by, and he stops and he peeks in and he says, how long is that? I said, 7 minutes. He goes, rewind it. So I rewind it, and he stands there on the step and he watches the whole 7 minutes. And he says, it's as though you're afraid of the silence. He says, you're telling so many jokes, you're going so fast, you're not giving them a chance to laugh, you're stepping on the laughs. He says, if they're not chatting, you got them. He says, and clearly you got them, you just gotta let them laugh. He says, don't move, don't say another word until the joke, till the laughter subsides. And I went from 7 minutes to about 23 minutes with that note.
Wow.
You know, so it was, I think comedy-wise, it was the best advice I've ever gotten.
Yeah.
And now it's like if you watch me when I'm working, you'll see the pause, you'll see me wait, and bingo.
Yeah. I would think, you know, it's just like the same thing in music where the pauses accentuate, you know, when there's a break in the music and then it comes back in more powerful, it grabs you that much more.
Yeah. I think there's a guy that I worked with in Reno, Chris Frangiola, and he would do this thing where he would purposely just get soft. He'd start talking and he'd get soft. And I noticed the audience kind of leaning in. And I was like, I'm going to have to steal that. Because it was such a great device. It was like he forced him to kind of just focus a little more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Everybody has their
exactly.
Own tricks.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Like with me, if somebody goes on before me and they drop a bunch of F-bombs, then I'll go up and I'll sing. And it changes the mood of the room. Mm.
Yeah. Mm. That's cool. Love hearing the little the little tips and tricks and the things that I think people don't think about. You know, stuff that just happens in a room that you're being affected by, but you're not conscious of, maybe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, the manipulation.
So cool. Well, I want to thank you so much for this time today. I'm such a fan, and I love being able to talk to you and laugh along with you. And I'm encouraging everyone who's listening to go and make sure they track down your stuff to make sure that they support you. And where can people find you and interact with you?
They can go to my website, markchristopherlawrence.com. All my social media is on there. You know, just scroll down to the bottom. You can see all my stuff. I'm easy to find. Google Mark Christopher Lawrence. I'm easy to find.
Awesome.
Yeah. But all my social media stuff is on the website.
Nice. Yeah. Well, and again, I encourage all you listeners to make sure that you do that and follow Mark and his journey. And I'm sure that there's just going to be even more amazing stuff coming down the pike. And,
If they want a shout out, they can go to Cameo and I'll give them a Cameo shout out.
Oh, that's awesome.
I had one lady, you know, wanted me to do a Cameo. She says, yeah, I just want you to call up my friend and tell him off for me. I'm like, all right.
Easy enough.
Your money.
That's amazing.
It's so funny.
Good stuff.
I was thinking, who do I want to tell off and who would I get to do it? Who would I be willing to pay to do it?
That would
be funny.
Yeah, that would be. And you got me thinking.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much again for this time. I really appreciate it. And just all the best, you know. I know that this is a season where everybody's just trying to figure things out. And I know that, you know, there will be a time when we're past all this craziness, and I look forward to just more content and more things out there where, you know, all of us get to show up and be our authentic selves and encourage each other. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. Stay happy and healthy and safe, my friend.
You too.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.